an article from Harvard Business School called Women Are Avoiding AI. And it found a stat that women are adopting generative AI at a 25% lower rate than men. And the Reserve Bank of New York survey found that half of men used generative AI in the last year and only a third of women. Why are we being held back? Are we cheating if we're using AI? Are we qualified? Women fear that they'll have greater scrutiny when they're not perceived as having genuine skills and maybe skills that match those of their male counterpart.
Welcome back to another episode of the Career Confidence Podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard. Before we dive in, I want to share something new with you. As part of the Career Confidence Podcast, I'm introducing a brand new series called AI Ready Women. Now, every fortnight, I'll be sitting down with Lou Companoni. She is the Director of Artificial Intelligence at Datacom. And we're going to talk about the signals you need to be paying attention to, what's happening in AI right now, and what it actually means for you so you can stay future ready and not get left behind. Now, as you know, I am incredibly passionate about making sure people feel informed, empowered, and in control of their careers as the future of work continues to change. And I genuinely couldn't think of a better person to partner with than Lou. If you want to stay up to date with what's happening in AI and understand how to apply it to your career in a practical, human way, these conversations are going to be incredibly powerful. And this is the first episode in the AI Ready Women series, and I'm so excited to share it with you today. Now, make sure you subscribe to the Career Confidence Podcast so you never miss an episode, and reach out to let me know your biggest takeaway. We'll also be bringing on some amazing guests as part of this series. So this is honestly just the beginning, and I really hope you enjoy episode one. AI is reshaping the world, and while the headlines swing between hype and fear, most women are asking just one question. What does this mean for me? This is AI Ready Women. Welcome to the first ever episode, the first of many episodes of AI Ready Women with myself, Georgie Hubbard, and...
And hi, I'm Lou Companoni. So this podcast is about the future of AI and the future of AI and what it means for women, the workforce, and the world. And Georgie, I know it's a topic that we're both very passionate about, so I'm excited to have lots of conversations about this. And, you know, I thought it might be quite interesting. I'd love to hear about why you are so personally interested in this topic.
Yeah, I love that. And I couldn't think of anyone else to do this podcast with Lou. So it's an honor. We've got to know each other over the last year. And you're an incredible woman and a woman leading in this space. So I'm excited to do this with you. But why am I so passionate about it? Well, I've worked in technology recruitment for the last 14 years. And I have seen in that time how technology's evolved, how there's so many opportunities in technology, how it shapes cultures, and basically it's just a part of our lives. And what I've also seen in the last 14 years is how women are being left out of a lot of conversations. And if I reflect back to my early years of recruitment, I can probably count on one hand, Lou, how many females that I placed, how many female leaders I hired for. And it's always been something I've been very consciously aware of. And 8 years ago, I started my own agency, See It Solutions, and that was very intentional because I wanted to have an agency where I was putting more of a focus on making sure I was positioning women in the right way. I also started Sisterhood Club, which is a Women in Tech initiative. And when I saw AI start to play a bigger part in our society, I remember the first time I used ChatGPT and I was like, oh my goodness, this is the start of something very important. I got my whole body went into goosebumps and I thought this is about to change everything. And I thought, I do not want to sit this one out. I want to be a part of this conversation and I want women to be a part of this conversation as well. And unfortunately, I see patterns about to repeat themselves, which is why we're doing this together, which is why I've written a book, which is why I'm driven every day to basically make sure that the future of work and the future of technology is inclusive for all, and especially women.
Yeah, that's so cool, Georgie. That I'm so inspired by you and how you have handled this. So just, you know, from writing the bold move and actually helping to support other women to make a move into AI. And just to think honestly, I like your honesty. I like that you're being honest and going, this is creating big change and we need to get ready for it, because we've talked about this. Too many people are sort of in denial and don't want to talk about the fact that it is creating impact. Yeah, I was similar when I first used ChatGPT. I thought this is going to change everything. I really agree with the sentiment behind it's the new electricity, it's the new internet. And I've been working in tech for accidentally for about 20 years, even though I didn't intend to get into tech. I started out, as you know, as a writer before getting into UX and service design and then innovation and then emerging tech. And I've never seen so much change in such a short period of time as I have in the last, probably even just the last 12 months have been wild. And for me, I've sort of been more actively involved in AI for probably the last 3 years rather than just general emerging tech. And a part of me is really excited to be in it. But a part of me is worried, and especially when I look around and think about the representation of who is involved in AI and the direction that it needs to go in and the kind of skill sets that we need.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way. And I do have the opportunity to every week speak to hiring managers, HR directors, and I'm hearing it firsthand, Lou, that they're going to be restructuring. They're going to be looking for certain types of skills, certain types of people. And I don't want to just sit on that information. I think it would be irresponsible. I feel like I have a responsibility to the tech market that I've helped people get jobs in for the last 14 years to help them position themselves for what's next. And that's why we're going to do this, because when you're ready and you're prepared for what's coming, you don't fear it. So I guess this podcast is really going to help people think about AI in a really optimistic way. We're not going to sugarcoat things, though. We're not going to pretend that everything's going to be great and okay. There's going to be some things we're going to have to prepare for. But how can we do it in a way that feels empowered rather than in a place of fear and uncertainty? I know that's what you want to get out of this as well.
Absolutely. And that kind of is a good segue into the theme for today's episode, which is, are women in the room? And I think that's a pretty good place to start for representation, is actually people being in the room. Now, I thought of this topic of are women in the room from a really unexpected source. So I was watching an interview with by Fortune magazine with Natasha Lyonne. You would know her from Russian Doll and Orange is the New Black, beautiful curly hair. And the conversation turned to AI, which I was not expecting. Further proof that absolutely everyone is talking about AI. And she used the phrase when she was asked about AI, we are architects of our own future, specifically in the context of talking about AI development and ethics. And I loved that. I love the idea that we need to actively shape the way that this goes. The future isn't written yet. And then she said something that I loved, which she said, what matters is who is in the room. And she said, the people in the room right now, the AI leaders and the tech execs, are the ones who are deciding what we want human to mean and are driving our AI future. And that was quite a sobering moment for me to go, if women aren't in the room, then we are not shaping the way that it's going.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge. Yeah.
Then that comes to the whole point of why aren't women in the room? And I feel like we have been left out of some really big conversations in the past. And, you know, you look at who's in the power now of all these big tech companies. It's mainly held by the same people, and they're mostly men. And I don't feel comfortable with that, because AI is going to have such a massive impact on everything. We can't just let one person, one type of individual decide our future for us. And I want to see a diverse range of voices from all backgrounds, all races, all genders come to this table and have input and have a say, because that's how we're going to make sure that AI is safe, ethical, and represents us as human beings as well. Because you're already seeing bias in it already. You know, I'm sure I was listening to a podcast the other day of a woman who said, create me an image of a CEO, and it created a man. And I just thought, see, this is already part of the problem. And then we're going to go far, too far the other way, and then go really, really politically correct and generate goodness knows what. So where's the middle ground here? How are we all going to make sure that we feel equally represented in a fair and safe, ethical way? And if women have a say, I feel like the future is a lot more going to be a lot more positive than potentially where it's going right now.
Yeah. And I want to look at some stats. I don't want to just be throwing stats at you, but I think I want to share some of them because I think it makes you realize who is in the room when you look at some stats. So, you're the one who told me this, and it really shocked me that only 22% of AI roles globally are held by women. And this is disturbing as well, that only 18% of AI researchers are women. And in terms of senior roles, and this plays into what you were just talking about before, only 14% of senior executive roles in AI are held by women.
Yeah.
That's who's in the room.
Well, exactly. And I think that if women aren't leading AI, then AI is being built with a very narrow lens. And this is what kind of really bothers me. And I really want to kind of like unpack this more, because I think that does it all come from a programming that we've been programmed? Like, are women trained to see things as a risk and fear change? And I think back to even like my school days, because I was reflecting on this the other day when I read that stat. And I thought, why are women more risk averse? And I remember like being in school, and there was like always like the naughty kids, right? And usually they were boys, and they would get attention from like playing up in class. But I remember if I did it, or if it was like sit down, go to detention, whereas a guy was like, it was funny. It was like, oh, it's funny. And it just all goes back to this like programming of women that, why are we the way we are? Why are we more risk averse? Why don't we want to use our voices? Why are we more, I guess, fearful of this? I was really trying to think about it, but it's a real problem that needs to be looked at.
Is there something good in that fear though? Just to flip that. Because I think I also don't believe in full steam ahead progression and innovation when it comes to AI. So I think there is something in that. I don't want women to be cautious to the point where they don't get involved in AI. But I also think going, are we designing the right thing? Are we thinking about what the consequences are of what we're creating is good? And maybe if we can find a balance and bring in those, that's why I want women in AI, is to bring in those perspectives. Like, there was this interview with Geoffrey Hinton that I saw. So, you know, he's the godfather of AI. And people were talking to him about the existential risks of AI. You know, what happens if AI starts thinking for itself and we go into artificial super and general intelligence? And he's been using this term that I really like called maternal AI. And he talks about the fact that we need AI that thinks more about us than about itself. So it's actually not working in its own interests. It's working in the interests of the greater good.
Mm-hmm. And this is where women come in, because I generally do think that when I chat to women, they're more concerned about the ethics. They're more concerned about what this means for the everyday person. They're more concerned about society, what it means for our environment. Whereas I'm not saying that some men don't think this way, because of course they do. But I think as women, having that more nurturing, I guess, nature to us, we think about this in a different way. And then I have conversations with a lot of like amazing men that I speak to, and they're like, well, it's happening, we just got to get on with it. Whereas women are like, hang on, I think we should slow this down, because have we thought about this, and have we thought about this, and what's the repercussion? And it's the third, fourth, fifth level consequence of something, right? And I look, where I sit right now is I am optimistic, but there is a part of me that is also wanting this to just slow down a bit. I think we are moving far too fast, and I don't think we're putting enough foundations in place to make sure that people aren't going to get sideswiped from this and suddenly find themselves losing their job and then losing an income and not know how to regroup and reskill themselves and position themselves for what's next. So that's how I think. I'm like, can we just slow this down and think about this? Whereas there's a lot of guys are like, more power, more opportunity, let's just go. And if we break things, we'll deal with that. Or that's just the collateral. Whereas I don't think women think that way, from the women I speak to anyway.
I think it's important for us to play a role in thinking about the impact of what we're doing and what that could actually mean for us. And, you know, that's really what we want to do in this podcast is, you know, that I'm a futurist and my background is in futurism and I love thinking about future signals and what's coming. So I'm excited within this podcast for us to be thinking about the future of AI and what it means for us. And to think about all different topics, you know, including things like what it means for human intelligence, mental health, dating. You know, I'm weirdly obsessed with dating because I used to work in online dating. And I think I'm really excited to be talking to other women and other very interesting guests about what things mean and what the impact is of our choices. Now, you've heard me talk before about signals and future signals and what they mean. So I thought we could start in this episode looking at a few signals as a bit of a taste test for what's coming in our future episode. So when I look at a future signal, the first thing I do is ask three questions: what, so what, and now what. So what is it and what does it mean? So what is the impact going to be? And we're going to think about the impact for women, the workforce, and the world. And now what? What do we need to do as a result of it? And is it a future we want to enable or to prevent? So, okay, the first signal that I'm going to put forward for us, did you see the Time Magazine Person of the Year award last year?
Yes.
So
yeah, wasn't much last representation,
year, for those
was
of
there?
You who don't know, not really. So last year, the Time Magazine Person of the Year was the Architects of AI. And I love this, that it actually ties back to Natasha Lyonne's idea of architecting our future. So here's what the future looks like, according to Time Magazine. So there was 8 people on the cover, all at the top of a high-rise building, sitting on a beam, precariously, some of them, 6 men and 2 women. So there was the 2 females were Lisa Su, who's the CEO of AMD, and Fei-Fei Li from Stanford Human-Centered AI Institute. Amazing, incredible women. Very happy to see them on there. Then there was 6 men. So Jensen Huang, Elon Musk, Sam Altman, Mark Zuckerberg, Dario Amode from Anthropic, and Demis Hassabis, is that how you say his name? Anyway, what I thought was very interesting about this story and the visual, so look it up if you haven't seen the picture. Lisa Su looks like she's about to be almost pushed off the edge by Elon Musk. And then Fei-Fei Li is almost half out of the frame, so barely visible. And, you know, like what's your gut reaction when you saw this cover? What did you think?
I just think it petrifies me, if I'm honest, because like I said, what got me to want to start speaking about this more is because I've seen it play out in real time about how if women aren't represented, if we don't see people that look like us, we don't feel like it's for us. And that scared me because I thought we need representation now. We need to get a balance. And it's not just Time Magazine as well, Lou. It's like other podcasts that I've listened to because I want to stay up to date. There's a podcast I listen to and they've never had a female on. And they're just basically like 4 blokes talking about AI. And I've never seen them have a female person come on the podcast. And that bothers me. But I want to learn. But then I start to think, on a subconscious level, there's all men talking about this. Where do I belong? Where's my place in this? So it makes me concerned that if we don't have strong female voices in this space, women are going to think, oh, that's not for me. That's for the tech bros. I'm not technical. Therefore, that's what bothers me. And like I said at the start, this is going to be such a big part of our future and our society. And if we don't have the right people having a say and a sway in this, then I'm concerned that our voices aren't going to matter and we're going to get pushed out of a very, very important conversation.
I totally agree. I think that's so important to people being able to see themselves in AI. Something that once I spoke at an event and I had, oh, I think it was a Miro event, and I had a young woman come up and talk to me afterwards. And I'd shared within my talk that my background is more creative. So creative writing and strategy and futurism. And she said, wow, I'd never seen myself in a job in AI until you spoke. Because she saw that you actually can come from a background that's not extremely technical or scientific. And actually, maybe that's exactly what this industry needs. That doesn't make you unqualified if you have those skills. Perhaps actually it is your immense empathy and really good critical thinking and strategic foresight skills and so on that makes you exactly the kind of person who should be in the industry and asking the right questions.
Yeah. A million percent. And I'll give you a real time example of this because this happened to me recently. So I take a lot of job descriptions every week from different companies. And I had this hiring manager ringing me up and say, Georgie, we're looking for this head of product role. But when it comes to technical skills, we need somebody who's about a 4 or 5 because now AI does so much of the tech work, the grunt work. He said, however, when it comes to the human skills, adaptability, resilience, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, we need someone who's a 9. So this is where women play the biggest part and have the most opportunity because now the tables are turning. Before to get into tech, yes, you did have to understand how to code if you wanted to follow a certain path. But now AI's completely rewritten the rules and you get to play in this game. And really, if you were to work on any skill right now, I'd say double down your human skills, your communication, your critical thinking, your adaptability. Yes, learn AI. Yes, get fluent in it. But think about how you can position yourself and really draw out these really important human skills. And then you're going to stand out in this marketplace. So I think the tables are turning. And women need to be a part of this because the opportunity's never been greater from where I sit anyway. But that's just one example of many that I can give you from the conversations I'm having every day with people who are hiring for certain skills right now.
I think it's a great example. And I think that human skills are underrated in certain roles as well. I thought something was interesting. This wasn't actually a signal that I was going to talk about today, but it just came to mind, which is Klarna, which is a pay-as-you-go funding mechanism from Sweden. Now, they were in the news last year because they made redundant 700 contact center workers and they replaced them with AI agents in OpenAI. What's interesting is for a little while, those AI agents were handling some of the queries. And the CEO proudly said, you know, we've managing to do 75% of the work with all these AI agents. But then what happened a year later is they had to hire a lot of them back. And what I think, because I was thinking about this, and not just contact centers, but also administration roles are another one. So the thing I was going to bring up is the Brookings study about AI job displacement that said that, you know, some of the top roles that are being displaced by AI are ones that women are predominantly in. So clerical work, administrative and office support. Now, to me, these are actually all ones that need a huge amount of empathy and nuance and collaboration and a lot of those softer skills. I'm thinking like I've got the best EA. I'm obsessed with her, Anna. She's amazing. And she's so good at not just juggling my calendar, but kind of knowing what's important and the fact that actually at this time I'm going to be dropping my son off and I might need a bit of headspace to do this. And it's actually her incredible empathy and problem solving that makes her amazing at her job. Are we replacing all the amazing parts and thinking it can just be done by AI?
Yeah. And I think exactly the same thing. And I'll give you another example of what happened to a friend recently. She had to change a flight and it was a family emergency and she didn't just want to lose the flight because it was quite a costly flight. So she rang up the call center and she thinks to start with it was an AI bot because it was just giving her just one word answers. Anyway, she finally got hold of a human, explained the situation, and they refunded, or they basically said, of course, you know, I'm so sorry to hear this. And this is my point, right? So that's the human in the loop, because not everything is black and white. And how do we, that's to my friend who had just had a family emergency to deal with. If you explain that to a human, that human is going to empathize and be like, I'm so sorry to hear this. Of course, we can do something for you. You're a valued customer of ours. AI is not doing that. So I think companies do need to be thinking about their reputation. And if I was a company that had a big call center right now, I wouldn't be just replacing all of my staff with bots, because everyone's different. And yes, there's some queries that a bot can answer, but those types of things, AI is not equipped to deal with that. And you could lose some valuable customers, if you don't think about these things.
I think so much of it is context and intent. And that's kind of what you talked about. If the context is that you're going through a family emergency, even if you are someone who's highly digital, in that moment, you want to talk to a person. You need the comfort of talking to a person. And so I think there's this term that I talk about with AI use cases. So, when Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin got divorced and they use the term conscious uncoupling. I use this for AI use cases where I call it conscious decoupling. And I think it's actually thinking about what's the use case, like why is someone calling up and what are you doing? And therefore, what is the best way of doing it? Don't have this one reified view of going every use case in the contact center, we're going to use an AI agent or we're going to use this particular type of model. Actually look at what it is and what's needed and think about it as a problem. So if the use case is someone calling in for a family emergency, that to me is a friction point where you don't have AI. But it's actually going back to what you talked about earlier, taking time to think about this as a problem and just not rushing into AI as a solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And just sort of final thing to say on that stat, because it is concerning, like 85% of these roles are held by women. And, I was trying to think about this and a lot again, and I'm a deep thinker. I reflect back on what's happened in my life and my programming, because I'm always challenging, is that my thought or is that society putting that thought onto me? Like I'm always trying to push back a bit. And I think that if I reflect on when I was thinking about my career, and this is about years ago now, I'm 37, almost 38, but tech wasn't on the agenda back then. I mean, obviously the internet was only just coming of age. It was this, you're a female, therefore you can be a secretary, you can be a nurse, you can be a social worker, a teacher. It was like, this is what you do. And women were kind of like pushed down very stable, operational paths because it was reliable, organized, and supportive. And we haven't trained women for these sort of more, technical roles as much. I think we are now. I think we're doing a better job. But I think it's our generation of women that could find this transition a bit harder, because the programming that we've always had is get something reliable, get something stable, get something that maybe you could do part-time because you might be a mum. It's this kind of programming that then we think, or that looks too technical, or that looks too hard, or there's too much risk involved in that, or there's too much of a steep learning curve. I think this is the mindset shift as women that we need to unpack a bit and really think about, have I been programmed into thinking this way? Are these my thoughts, or are they been pushed on to me? Because a lot of things are caught, not taught as well. And I think that's something to really be reflective on as well.
And also going, do I need to be that technical to work in AI? Because I think the way I describe AI is it's a democratizing technology. It's one of the first technologies that allows us to use human natural language to access technological capabilities. How many people do you know who are doing absolutely badass stuff with AI and don't actually have any development background or technical skills? They're just using it in a really creative way. And sometimes it's just about really incredible prompting. Like I look at my sister. So my sister is a jewelry designer and an illustrator, and she uses AI to design all sorts of incredible stuff, but she calls it painting with words, which I love. So it's actually about her prompting. And I think if she didn't have the incredible creative mind that she has, she wouldn't be able to prompt it in such an interesting way, because she knows how to design. And so she knows the details that are needed, but she doesn't have technical skills, but she's able to think about how she would adapt and use those within her work. I mean, I'm sure you can think of some great examples of people who are sort of badass with AI and not technical.
Yeah, just the way a certain number of my friends are using it now. Like, I've got one friend who's thinking about starting a side business, and she's sort of starting to build her own website with this and build her own funnels and her own marketing and sales. I'm like, and she's so excited by this. She feels so empowered. And I'm like, keep going, keep learning, keep evolving. And it's definitely how I'm training myself to think as well. But it's what we are exposing ourselves to, the stories we're telling ourselves. And I think it's really important to be aware of the language that we're using around this as well. I'm very aware of what I'm saying to myself. And, oh, you know, for example, I was, when AI was just sort of really sort of starting to build, I was watching my husband Kyle play around with the first version of like Claude Code and Google Studio, and I was looking at it going, that looks far too technical for me. And I thought, hang on, I've got to catch myself do it, because I'm thinking, if I'm doing this, other women are doing it. And I caught myself do it, and I thought, that's not going to be my story. I want to learn this. I want to understand this. I don't need to be technical. I don't need to know how all this comes to be, but I want to be able to prompt this correctly so I can create things. And I think we just need to be very, very aware of the stories that we're telling ourselves, because stories become beliefs, and beliefs will then dictate our future and our decisions. Yes. So that's something I'm really aware of.
I think so. We have to be careful of the language and also the way that we're talking to ourselves. You know, I sort of, when I first moved into this role, I remember thinking, am I the right person for it? You know, that we talk about imposter syndrome, but it's almost like, you know, am I qualified for this? Is this right? Like, I have been working in tech for 20 years, and I'd been working in AI and emerging tech for a good part of that. But it's going, what does that even mean? So if we're sort of going, I think it's because what you said, we're associating AI with technical skills only, but from this whole conversation, it's all the other skills that we need just as much, if not more. It's the empathy, the creative thinking, and actually valuing those skills in yourself and saying that you have a place, you should be in the room, is what it comes down to.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to women, I mean, there's a reason why I titled the book Build Confidence First. And the whole first 2-3 chapters are dedicated to just that, because if we don't believe that we're capable of learning this, or we tell ourselves a story of it's too hard, it's not for me, I'm not technical enough, we're going to hold ourselves back. So I think that this is such an important point to make, is that we need to be aware of the stories we tell ourselves, the beliefs we have, and the language that we use every single day, what we read, and who also we're hanging around with. Because if we're also hanging around with people who are reaffirming and validating our thinking all the time, and obviously it's going to replace our jobs, there's nothing we can do about it, that's not coming from a very empowering place. But if you're hanging around with people who are actively using it, like my friend who's building her website and seeing this as a great opportunity, I go, oh, well, if she's doing this, that means that I can do it, and it means I can help other women do it. And we just need to create this community, which I hope we create together here, Lou, of women that are getting behind the driver's seat of their own career, seeing this as an opportunity and freaking grasping it with both hands, with the imposter syndrome as well. Because by the way, every single time you do something that scares you and you push yourself outside of your comfort zone, guess what? Fear's going to come up. You're going to second guess yourself. You're going to have all that sort of negative thoughts come up, and it's all natural. But if we believe that voice and that story, we're going to not take the action, and we're going to just stay stuck. And that's the biggest risk of all right now, not taking action and not seeing this as the opportunity that it is, and going forth and trying to think about how we can use this for the greater good of our own lives, and at the same time impact other people as well.
Yes, so well said. And I think it's doing something, actually acknowledging the fear and going, that's okay, but rather than running away from it, actually running towards it. We've talked about this before. So this brings me to the third signal that I was going to talk about. So there was an article from Harvard Business School called Women Are Avoiding AI. And it found a stat that, this is from last year, that in general, women are adopting generative AI at a 25% lower rate than men. And the Reserve Bank of New York survey found that half of men used generative AI in the last year, and only a third of women. So I'm really interested to talk about, you know, what, like, why are we being held back? And one of the reasons that was cited in the survey by women is this idea of ethics. So are we cheating if we're using AI? And judgment, so fear of being seen as lacking expertise. I've just talked to you about that narrative that we have. Are we qualified? And then the third thing is workplace penalties. So women fear that they'll have greater scrutiny when they're not perceived as having genuine skills and maybe skills that match those of their male counterparts. So, I mean, have you seen this in your own network where women have cheating and who are completely avoiding it? And what do you think is a good way for us to get past that?
I think it all comes back to what we're choosing to focus on and the questions that we're asking ourselves. So I think a lot of women ask, well, they don't ask, sorry, how can AI help me? They ask, is this allowed? Is this ethical? Am I doing something wrong? I think we need to be aware of the questions that we're asking ourselves about AI. And instead of, is this right? Is this wrong? Am I cheating? It's reframing the question of like, how can this help me? And you said to me recently, you said, just focus on one task at a time. So I did this recently. I made, because I don't think it's cheating, but I maybe did have a story and a belief that, oh, I don't want to help get AI to help me write that email because I'll, you know, I'm not engaging my brain. And there's an element of that, which we can go on to talk about, because I think you shouldn't use AI for everything. But for simple tasks like writing certain emails that usually just, I don't need the brain power for that. I just need to put a quick response together. I will literally just talk into ChatGPT, open the talk function, speak what I want to say back in this email. And within 5 seconds, it would have spat me out an email. It's not perfect. So I have to go in and change a few things because otherwise I sound like a robot. And that has, that's taken me now 15 minutes to respond to this email down to 5. So my question whenever it comes to like using AI is it's not cheating. I'm just making myself more effective and efficient and even better at what I do. So I think we just need to be, again, really aware of the questions, the reframing and the beliefs we have around it, because we can't afford to actually think like this anymore. But yeah, that's just my take. I think it's just really important to think about what stories, again, we're telling ourselves about this, because that's going to hold us back.
Yeah, I love that the way that you just described then about how you're using it, because that's a great example. You were literally talking to AI being your assistant. You were dictating notes and it was coming out of your brain. It's not like it suddenly wrote the email from thin air. It's just that you're busy and you probably don't have time to write it all down. So it was just shaping it all. And then you did a quick sense check. To me, that's not cheating. It's just being smart. It's being smart with your time. And I think some people are looking for these giant ways of saving time, right? So they're looking for, I want to do something that takes me 2 weeks and I want it to take 5 minutes. Realistically, unless you have some really incredible engineering and a really good use case, that's probably not going to happen. But that example of something that's 15 minutes took 5, if you add that up over your whole day, it starts to count.
I almost talk about it
almost like the boring functional things that matter. It's not the big, cool, sexy use cases that are going to make the front page and you're going to talk about at a conference. It's boring things like cutting down the amount of time to take an email, doing your timesheets quickly, little things like that, boring but functional, that make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. It's just summarizing notes for you. It's like, these are just simple things. And then on the larger scale, how I'm using AI in my business is one example is obviously I've ran another podcast, sorry, for a couple of years now. And what used to take myself and my team probably about half a day to edit now takes us 5 minutes. Because literally we put it into a program and you should see it. It goes, edits everything. And it takes out all the ifs, buts, the pauses. I'm blown away every time I do it. I said to Kyle, can I press the button? 3 minutes, right? Like that's so something technical. Even bigger. That's big, right? But just day to day, the simple tasks, I think to myself, how am I going to become more efficient? Not, oh, this is cheating. I should be using my brain to respond to this email. No, some emails, yes, it's probably going to require me to actually sit down and be a bit more strategic and stuff if I'm pitching for something or whatever. But most of the time, AI does such a fantastic first draft. And then I just go in, edit it. And what it gives me is absolutely fantastic. And I'm like, thank you, AI. I actually say on a regular basis, Lou, God, I love AI. I think that comes out of my mouth multiple times a week.
That's what people think I say.
Because it saves me so much time, especially in recruitment where, you know, for another quick example I'll give you. So when I go on briefing calls, you know, before I was taking tons of notes. And again, I take those notes, I would write them all out. I then try and put a job description together from it. Took me ages. Now I've got the neat meeting notes. AI summarizes them for me, whack it into ChatGPT or Claude, and I say, I want you to turn this into a job description, take out the company name. What it gives me is a good first draft. I go in, change it, boom. That's literally about another 1 or 2 hours pieces of work there. Saves me. I probably do that in about 20 minutes, if that. Again, another example of how it can be used.
I love it because I write I call them my stream of consciousness notes. I actually have to take notes when I'm doing meetings and stuff, even just as a way of anchoring myself to the conversation and concentrating. And I just write them in the way that I hear them. And I go back to my notes sometimes later and I think, I'm not sure what that point was really meant to be. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. But what I found is brilliant because I'm just sort of writing it as I hear it. And then I normally have to take a lot of time to go and actually put all the pieces back together and work out, okay, this was the key point and this is what this person said then. What I love is that because I don't really like using transcripts on meetings personally, because I think that's just like listening to absolutely everything and you don't know the significant parts. But I use AI then to take my transcript and actually to make sense of it and to start to group and synthesize it together to go, actually, these were the key points that I thought that mattered. And it stops me from procrastinating because normally I would then take a little while to do a summary of a discussion in an email as a follow-up because I'd be like, oh, I have to go through my horrible notes and I have to make sense of them. Now I get Claude to do it. And Claude does Claude doesn't get bored. Claude is happy to do it. So I spend a bit of time thanking Claude as well for help. But I think that that's a good use of my time. That means I can have other conversations then with people that are going to be helpful. And for you, your superpower is actually the advocacy of what you do for women, thinking of new ideas, bringing stuff into the world. It's not writing emails. 100%. I don't think that's you cheating, you using AI to write emails.
No, but I think this on a more broader scale. I don't think as human beings, we should be sat on a computer writing emails. I think that this is how we can all use AI now to help us streamline our work, speed up this boring, repetitive task. Who likes spending time in their inbox? I have always just, every time I got to sit down, I'm like, oh, I better check my emails today. And I made a conscious decision not to check them in the morning. So I'll check them sort of like just before lunchtime, because otherwise it dictates my whole day. But it has saved me so much time and energy. And like you said, freed up time to do what I'm good at, my human skills. I have more catch ups with people. I'm more intentional about building my network. I have more time to be creative and think about how I'm going to come up with different frameworks and different ways to teach people certain things. And it's just such a massive time saver, Lou. And I think we just need to be aware of the language we're using around it, the stories we're telling ourselves, and not be too cautious about it when it comes to certain tasks. I think it's okay to just not overthink certain things. And the final thing I'd say about women is I think that we want to understand something almost perfectly before we start to really use it. But AI is evolving so quickly that you can't keep up, and no one can, and no one really.
There's no time.
No one's an expert as well, right? So just get going with it. Think about all the things that you do on a day-to-day basis that are boring, low-hanging tasks that you would almost love to outsource to a VA, and make AI your VA. Make it your personal assistant, and it will change your life.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm going to bring us back to thinking about the three signals that we talked about today. So I'll give you a recap. So we had the Times Person of the Year, Architects of AI, the Brookings study about AI job displacement and which jobs are being most impacted by AI and the high proportion of women in those jobs. And then lastly, we had the Harvard Business School article on women are avoiding AI that we just talked about. So out of those, which one hit the hardest for you?
I think it's the women not using it, because we just don't have a choice. And if we don't use it, we honestly could get left behind. And if we're not a part of the conversation shaping this new technology, then our views, everything we've fought for, everything that women have given up, they're literally, they've risked their lives in the past to get us to this point where we're valued members of society. And we still got a long way to go, let's be honest. Let's not kid ourselves into thinking that we are in an even keel world. I could sit here and for another hour talking about all the things I've experienced as a business owner, working in a very male dominated environment, of all things against me as a woman, but you know, that's maybe for another episode. But we're still at a disadvantage being a woman in the first place. And then AI, you add that into the mix, the gap could get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So we don't have a choice now. We have to be part of this conversation. Just get using it. Don't be afraid. It's not cheating. You don't need to use it for the really important creative things, but just think about those small tasks, those annoying tasks that you don't like doing anyway. How could AI make you better, faster, and more efficient? That's how I think about it. And then from there, you can start getting more advanced. But that's a good starting point. How about you? What do you think about it?
For me, it's definitely the Time magazine cover. Like, there's something almost quite sinister about it. Like I said, it looks like one of them's being pushed off the into the abyss, and the other one's half out of the frame. And I think for me, because I'm a tech leader, and I know that that is actually a true representation. In fact, maybe that's a little generous, because what I thought when I saw isn't in the room, who isn't there? I mean, and a great example, like someone who I think is incredible, is Mira Murati, who's the former CTO of OpenAI, and she owns Thinking Machines Lab now. She's incredible, and she's done so much good and advanced so much, and she wasn't there. And also the other co-founder of Anthropic, hello, Daniela, why was she not on the cover? And so I think it's just interesting, just those strategic choices. For me, it's so important, like we said at the beginning, for women to be able to see themselves, to feel welcome and like they have permission to join, to not feel intimidated or that they aren't qualified or that they don't belong. Like, I think it's part of, you know, psychological safety is diversity is important for psychological safety, so that we can feel like we can walk into the room and be welcomed. Yeah, so for me, I think that was probably, in a way it's comical, but in another way it actually was a little bit depressing to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, and just sort of final point to really, I guess, drive this home, when I look for speakers for the Sisterhood Socials, the reason why I put together Sisterhood and the panels that I put together is because, again, representation matters, to your point. And what always fires me up is when I go looking for speakers. And I'll type in to LinkedIn, chief of AI, CTO, CEO, like trying to get some really senior females to come and speak, because again, you can't be what you can't see. And I want to put them in positions where they get to share how they got to where they are. And it's all inspiring. I literally have to scroll pages and pages and pages before I find a female. And then I'll go again, write her down, page, page, page. Oh, there's another female, write her down. And it's just a constant reminder to me and of how important the work is that we're doing, because it is literally spot the female. And I want to just point out you as well, because, and you're doing such a phenomenal job now by putting yourself out there. Because I remember I said to you when we decided to do this podcast, I said, you know, you'd also have a responsibility because you are now head of AI, a very large consulting business, and you are a representation of women. And I think you're doing a phenomenal job. I feel like you are leading the way and you're putting yourself out there. You're using your knowledge and your voice in a really positive way. And I want to encourage more women to do that. So if you're a woman in tech or digital AI, please speak up. Please be seen. Come on this podcast. We'd love to have you, because the more women support women, the more we're going to have a say. And we're going to be shaping the future as opposed to just being pushed aside and not being in the rooms where all the big decisions are being made. And I don't want to sit back and let that happen. So I want to honor you, Lou, because you're doing great work and we need more women.
Thank you, and so
being
are
visible.
You, Georgie. Thank yeah, you. The same with you. It's you're actually going out there and you're speaking for women. You're speaking confidently as well, and you're encouraging women, and you're saying the things that are difficult to hear that other people aren't talking about. And I think we need to do that. I'd love to have people on here having those conversations and being brave about actually saying that there is a little bit of something to worry about, but we can have that urgent optimism. We can architect our own future. So I'd really like to encourage, you know, people to come forward who'd like to be on the episode or recommend someone that you actually know who's a really incredible woman working in tech, or even just someone who has something interesting to say on the issues. But each week we're going to talk about different topics, everything from robotics to online dating and all sorts of issues that impact women and the workforce and the world. And also, I'm a frequent signal collector, as you know, Georgie. Every day I'm saving, I'm scrolling, and I'm saving all these things. But if you have an interesting signal that you've seen, please share it. And, you know, who knows, maybe we'll make that a feature of an episode, Georgie, where we can share a signal that that's been on someone's mind. Because I love this idea of, I call it like a future squad. Like everyone is contributing to this. The more that we see the signals of what's happening around us and put the dots together, not the dogs, that would be a different thing, the dots together, the more that we can actually go, because a signal is a dot and a trend is a line, right? So the more we can put the signals together and go, what is this trajectory, and we can get ahead of it, the more that we can shape and architect what's coming for us, which I think is really empowering. That's the opposite of running away in fear. It's kind of going, it's coming, and we can see it coming, and let's work out collectively how we can actually change the trajectory if that's coming, which really excites me.
And me. And yeah, I'm so looking forward to more episodes. And yeah, I really want to create a movement around this. So like Lou said, drop comments below, drop signals that you're seeing, reach out to us on LinkedIn, and let us know what your biggest takeaway was from today, what you enjoyed, and what you'd like to see more of. But Lou, such a pleasure to do this with you. And let's just continue to empower women, especially in this new world, because it's so important, and we need to be visible, but we need to be out there, and we need to be in control of our lives and our careers. And that's why we're doing what we're doing. So it's a delight to do it with you.
So fun to chat to you, Georgie. I love nerding out with you and getting deep and getting silly as well. It's really good. So I'm really excited to have more of these conversations and bring in more amazing women, and just us all belonging in the conversation and having permission to talk about it.
Agree.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, and we'll see you next time.